It's the Peter B. Collins Show. That makes me your humble host, Peter B. And every week, we schedule a visit with the proprietor of BradBlog.com. His Bradness, Brad Friedman. Hello, Brad. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. How are you, Peter?
I don't know. I've been trying to think of how I could put together some foreign investors and buy the port of Long Beach.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I've always wanted to have a port in my portfolio.
Oh, well, that's a good idea.
There's nothing else in it.
Nobody will pay attention if you do. Quite all right. Wow.
Well, Brad,
week, huh?
Brad, here's stuff that I have on my list to talk with you about, and let's compare notes, and then we'll dive in.
Okay.
Clint Curtis, great interview earlier this week.
Oh, great.
Bruce McPherson, last week at this time, snuck out the announcement certification of Diebold.
He sure did.
The Brad Blog exclusive, the infrared connection on the back of some Diebold machines.
Yep.
And Palm Beach, 100,000 votes. Found in, what, somebody's cargo pants?
No, 100,000 errors.
Is what they found. Okay.
Yes, errors on the computerized Sequoia voting machines down there, just so that Diebold doesn't get off too easy this week. These machines down there were actually Sequoia touchscreen machines.
All right. Well, where would you like to start? I'm going to let you choose the news.
Well, I can choose that, or I can give you the breaking news that I haven't even gotten up on Brad Blog yet.
Well, let's start there. We believe in breaking news. We break for breaking news.
I know, and as a matter of fact, some of this actually comes back to you, Peter, because I believe you were the one who tipped me off last month to some shenanigans up in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
We've now got some breaking news, a new chapter, a strange twist to that Alaska Diebold story. Basically, the Democratic Party up there had requested the election results, the files that are kept in the Diebold GEMS tabulator software, because there was a great deal of anomalies found in the 2004 election, where they had, in some cases, 200% turnout somehow. And so they had requested, the Democratic Party up there had requested those files from the Board of Elections, as you recall. Mm-hmm. And the Board of Elections said, no, we can't give this to you because we have a contract with Diebold which says this is proprietary information. Move ahead a few weeks, and finally the election board up there claims to have talked to Diebold. Diebold said, okay, it's all right to go ahead and release that information. After all, however, the election board reserved their right to, quote, manipulate the data.
That's a rich quote.
That's right.
Yes.
To manipulate the data before releasing the files. Okay. But in any case, they were supposed to be releasing them, as you recall. That was the last we discussed this. Well,
that's what I remember, yeah.
Brings us up to this week. It turns out that just 2 days ago, and just before I came on the air, I finished reviewing this letter. But the state is now once again turning down, officially denying the request for that that public records request to release that data. Sit down for this one, because the top security official in the state of Alaska determined it would be a security risk to release this data to the Democrats. So they have now, so they're back to square one at this point, where they're going to have to decide what to do if they want to challenge it in court. But right now, apparently, it is a security risk for the voters in Alaska to get a look at the election data from the 2004 election.
Any chance they would release it to a neutral third party like old the Emir in the United Arab Emirates,
That's
Dubai?
Right. The folks in Dubai have already reviewed this information, and they said everything is fine.
It's
unbelievable. This is what happens, Peter, as you know, when you privatize our public elections. It is absolutely insane. I can't imagine what security risk is posed by not allowing the voters to see how they actually voted in a presidential election, for crying out loud.
Yeah, it's a need-to-know basis, and I guess we just don't need.
That's correct. We'll have, hopefully, after we get off the air and the 5 or 10 minutes after to write up this, finish writing up this story, I will have the complete letter from the security official and from the state election official denying this public records request in this bizarre, really bizarre chapter, I would say, up
so
there in Alaska.
You'll be able to find it within the hour at bradblog.com if all things go well.
That's right.
Now let's go kitty corner across the country to Palm Beach. And what's the story there, Brad?
Okay, down in Palm Beach, and this broke just late last night, notable for a number of reasons, amongst them because it was actually picked up by the Associated Press, believe it or not. AP ran a story that was based on a report from Black Box Voting, an election watchdog group. They have been trying, apparently, for months to receive the election audit trail data from Palm Beach County, Florida. It took them some 9 months, apparently, to get this information. Once they did, they've been reviewing it, and they have released a lot of it last night on their website, and it turns out that they have found things like 100,000 errors logged on these paperless touchscreen Sequoia machines down there. They've got some, I don't have it in front of me here, they had 70,000 errors with the cards. You know, when you use these touchscreen machines, I don't know if you've used them before, but you need to put a card into the machine when you go to vote.
Yeah, it's like your ATM card. It accesses the machine and fires it up.
That's correct. So they found 70,000 errors related to those smart cards. They have found all kinds of notations in the audit logs that the dates are completely incorrect. Sometimes they've got things going on those machines in the middle of the night that are unexplained. They've got some machines that have all kinds of crazy data, including some data from 2010, yet nothing on Election Day, which was November 2nd, 2004.
And let me jump in here, yeah. Brad, because the language here in the report reads that computers logged about 100,000 errors, including memory failures. Now, if the computer logged those errors, can we relax and have confidence? Well, these are exposed. This is out on the table.
Well, it was hardly exposed. I mean, here we are in 2006, and it took these guys 9 months to even get at this data, much less to explain it, because there's all sorts of errors in there, all sorts of errors in there that are not explained. Amongst them, for example, many of the machines were rebooted over and over again throughout the election. Many of the machines were recalibrated. These touchscreen machines had to be calibrated.
We'll pick up there when we continue. Time for a break. Brad Friedman, my guest from bradblog.com. You can call us 831-899-5792. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, live up and down the left coast. It's 5:33, another summer weekend headed our way.
As I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I take a look at my life and realize it's messed up. Since I've been blasting and laughing so long that even my mama thinks that my mind is gone. But I ain't never crossed a man that didn't deserve it. Me be treated like a punk, you know that's unheard of. You better watch how you're talking and where you're walking. Or you and your homies might be lying and talk. I really hate the trip, but I gotta know. As they croak, I see myself in the pistol smoke. Fool, I'm the kind of dude that little homies wanna be like. On my knees in the night, saying prayers in the streetlight.
I don't know if it works for you, but I think of the electronic voting industry as a gangsta's paradise. With apologies to Coolio. We continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. For me, the leading site where you can get information on the issues related to electronic voting in this country and the battle to regain control from corporate interests. And Brad, before the break came through like a freight train and interrupted us, we were talking about Palm Beach County, Florida, 2004 presidential election. And depending on the reports, 70,000 malfunctions with the key card that voters use to access the machine, and more significantly, 100,000 memory errors recorded. Now, we would have assumed that all of those liabilities, any of the problems, would have deducted votes from the Republicans, from George W. Bush, right?
Well, we don't know. We don't know exactly what those errors meant, what actually occurred during those errors. All that we know is those errors got logged, and there's really no explanation for them.
But the pattern we saw in 2000 in Florida and in 2004 in Ohio were that anomalies tended to affect Democrats negatively and rarely did the same to Republicans.
That would be correct. So far, I mean, we see that all over the place with these, for example, the touchscreen machines. We've had thousands of reports of folks trying to vote for John Kerry, and the vote hops over to George Bush. We've had almost no report. I think I've heard of maybe two reports of the other, you know, of it going the other way, where somebody's trying to vote for Bush and it ends up going for John Kerry. You're correct.
Yeah.
One additional point that when we had to go to the break there, you were asking about these errors and if that means, oh, everything's fine and we caught them. One of the things that was noted in these reports was that one machine, for example, was powered down 128 times during the election. Now, if you've, you know, used your computer before and found out that it had crashed or the screen froze or something like that before you were able to save the data, and you had to power it down to start it back up, you know that, in fact, on this one machine alone, powered down 128 times, there's no way to know what data actually ended up getting lost.
Well, based on my experience, when it crashes, you lose data.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. While we're in Florida, let's talk about Clint Curtis, and then I want to segue to Bruce McPherson's late Friday announcement a week ago today.
Okay.
Clint Curtis is a guy you turned us on to through the blog and through your reporting on his whistleblowing of Tom Feeney. And we have to identify who Tom Feeney is. He's a major Republican operator in the state of Florida. He was the running mate for Jeb Bush in 1994 when Jeb was not successful in his quest to be governor of Florida. And he approached Clint Curtis at the software company YEI, Yang Enterprises, where he worked in Florida, and said, hey, well, and by the way, this guy Feeney was the counsel to this software company, so he was an insider both in the Republican machinery and in this relatively small software company.
Yeah, well, actually, Feeney was, at the time, he was registered, he was a counsel, general counsel, and registered lobbyist for the company, even while Feeney himself was Speaker of the Florida House.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what Clint Curtis told us, and we looked at the affidavit that you have a copy of in your reports at bradblog.com, and it was just fascinating to hear him describe how he was asked to prepare software that could manipulate votes without being detected. He did so. And I said, well, Tom Feeney must have said, well, Clint, we need this software because we think the Democrats are going to steal the election and we need to know how they'll do it. And he said, oh, no, it was nothing like that. He said, we need to save the vote in South Florida.
Well, sort of, yeah. He had that with the impression that Clint got. And remember, Clint at the time was a Republican. He was a lifelong Republican. And even now, he, you know, begrudgingly, when you ask him what he is, he'll say, conservative Democrat.
Right.
So, you know, at the time of that meeting, that was the impression that he got from the meeting with Feeney. It wasn't until the next day, after he had gone away and put together this vote-rigging prototype, he brought it back to the CEO of the company, Mrs. Yang, and, you know, explained to her that, hey, I could do everything that you guys ask for except hide these routines in the source code, because if anybody looks at the source code, they'll see the routines. And she said to him, oh, you don't understand. We have to hide that source code in order to get the contract. This is to be used to flip the vote in South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, he figured out something wasn't right.
Yeah.
And it's an incredible story. And He reported a lot more shenanigans that were going on at this company, including harboring Chinese aliens that were spying, he alleges, on the United States. And in fact, later on, several years later, the one of the fellows that he fingered as being an illegal alien who was spying on America was in fact arrested for espionage charges related to sending missile chips to China.
And the juicy payback is that whistleblower Clint Curtis is now a Democrat, and he's running against Tom Feeney in the congressional race this year. That's going to be a very interesting one.
And I'll take the opportunity to let folks know he could use support in a big way, because Feeney's got a lot of money. He's DeLay's number one supporter. He was Abramoff. He was on those trips to Scotland and everywhere else. So feel free to stop by ClintCurtis.com. And help the whistleblower fight the bad guys down there
and
in Florida.
Likewise, his Bradness is conducting a subscription drive right now. And if you would like to support his work fighting for our electoral rights, I direct you to bradblog.com, where you can take out a subscription for any amount that you're comfortable with. And I think that's a great way to approach it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Ryan in Salinas, you're on the air with Peter B. and Brad Blog.
Hey, good day, gentlemen. Hey, I want to thank Brad for his pursuit of the trying to get this disclosure about these machines. It sounds like an ongoing issue that warrants a lot of concern. Peter, a couple of weeks ago you mentioned that you had a problem with some reform in the state of Ohio. One of the elements of the reform was that there would be a requirement for some sort of an identification requirement. And I'd like you to explain either on the air or on the phone how confirmation that a person is who they claim to be is detrimental to the electoral process.
Well, Ryan, it's interesting because when the Carter-Baker Commission first released its report, one of the recommendations was for a photo ID for anyone before they're given a ballot at the polling place. And I initially said, that's okay. And then talking with a number of people on the program and hearing the issues aired out, I realized that this is a kind of phony stalking horse coming from the Republican right. And they have figured out that if you require a photo ID, that most Republicans will already have one or be able to get one, and that it will cause very little reduction in turnout or participation by Republicans. But
why is that a partisan?
I'm about to explain that there are many people who typically vote Democratic who are members of minority groups and who are low income and seniors who do not drive, do not have cars, and therefore have never had a need for a state-issued photo ID in the past. And there is no provision among those who are proposing the photo ID for voters to supply one at no charge, either through a motor vehicle department or through voting registrars. So this then becomes a barrier to participation. And Ryan, hold on, I'm the host here, Ryan. Your next question might be, well, gosh, how widespread is voter fraud where people use phony IDs or, go in and a ghost vote for somebody else? And the answer is, it's close to zero. So this is a solution looking for a problem that is a way of dressing up a Republican proposal to restrict participation by minorities and low-income individuals who typically vote Democratic. Ryan.
I think it's more of a case of trying to encourage everyone to participate on a level playing field, and I personally have no problem with a person that wants to vote in our system producing some sort of identification to confirm that they are who they say they are.
Obviously, there was
a group of people in, Wisconsin that couldn't get out to drive their cars to vote. So there was, five Democrat Party operatives that slashed the tires of the vehicles that were going to use, they were going to be used to help people that didn't have transportation. They may not have had IDs either.
Actually, so Ryan, let me help you out here for a second, if I could.
Ways, gentlemen.
Ryan, hold on. Brad wants to speak. Go ahead, Brad.
Let me help you out here if I could. By the way, those were not Democratic Party operatives. That said,
Brad. You know that. He worked for the local DNC committee in Madison.
Ryan, what you'll note about this isn't a problem about asking about ID. It's specifically asking for photo ID, which has been found to be unconstitutional by two federal courts recently as it was reviewed down in Georgia. That said, please also note that do you vote absentee by any chance, Ryan?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And how are you going to be giving your photo ID when you vote absentee? Now,
I'm in favor of some way of confirming that people are who they say they are, whether it's at the time of registration or whether you come up with a thumbprint or a fingerprint at the time that you...
Well, that's not a problem. That's not what we're talking about here at all. And you need to be careful because, in fact, it is an insidious Republican scheme to try and disenfranchise anywhere from 10 to 30 million Americans who do not have photo ID. We're not talking about ID when you register. You can ask for ID when you register. Most of the states that are doing photo ID, these state houses that are now trying to push this through, already have laws that when you vote for the first time at a polling place, you have to show some form of ID. The problem is there is no voter fraud epidemic in this country, and all of these laws that will require photo ID do not require photo ID for those who vote via absentee ballots and military ballots, and in both cases, those are largely Republican voters. Those people, like yourself, will not be required to use a photo ID. So you can vote for your wife or anybody else you want, and you'll never be asked for a photo ID. So I don't know how it levels the playing field, as you discussed.
Let's all agree that there's lots of room for reform here. And I don't think there's anybody, I don't want there to be a possibility of skewing these machines one way or the other. I'm for free and fair. And I'm also for people being who they say they are when they go to vote.
I'm right there with you, Ryan. I'm exactly for it. And if you don't need a photo ID when you vote, then why should anybody else need one?
All right, Ryan, I'm out of time. Thanks for your call today. Good to talk with you. It's 5:46. We'll return with Brad Friedman. You can call us 831-899-5792 on the Central Coast, toll free from Eureka or elsewhere at 888-579-2540. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 5:49. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. And we continue with Brad Friedman, the proprietor of bradblog.com. We got some callers we're going to get to you, but first, we've got to update people on the sneaky maneuver by appointed Republican Secretary of State here in California, Bruce McPherson. 1 week ago today, at right about this time, he dropped the bomb. And when you want to drop a bomb and avoid media attention, the Bush White House would instruct you that Friday about 5:15 is a really good time because the TV newscasts are all set for Friday and they don't do as much hard news. And the Saturday paper is the least read paper of the week. So if you want to bury something, this is the time to do it. And, Brad, we saw the surprise announcement, and I got your blog update just before the end of the program last week, that Bruce McPherson did just that and announced that he was recertifying Diebold electronic voting machines in California.
Yes, it was pretty amazing. I was on the air myself when I got the news just before the top of the hour, really. And mind you, it was also a holiday weekend, so it was an extra long weekend that he released that information on, defying... Boy, just about all reason in the world, he has gone ahead and recertified these Diebold touchscreen machines in the state after they were decertified back in 2004 when it was found that Diebold was using illegally patched machines, uncertified software, and that resulted in a multi-million dollar settlement with the state. And then moving it up to this last summer, they did a massive mock election test. They found that anywhere from 20 to 30% of the machines failed. Then you come to December where Diebold machines were found to have hackable code. And, in fact, a test election was flipped down there in Florida. And so when McPherson started to talk about recertifying these machines, suddenly he was in trouble because we had this hack down there in Leon County, Florida, concerning these memory cards that contain software, essentially, that can be hacked and was never actually examined by the federal authorities. So he sent those memory cards back to the feds to ask them to look at the data that was found, this hackable, it's called interpreted code, and said that, you know, he was going to hold off certification until he heard back from the feds. Well, about 2 months has gone by. He hasn't heard back, or at least we don't know if he's heard back. While I've been on the air here, I actually received a letter that I'm going to review from him. But instead of waiting to hear back that, in fact, these machines, these cards, used this code, which is actually banned by federal guidelines, he had his own analysis done here in the state. The analysis found, in fact, confirmed that this hackable code exists on these machines. And then almost inexplicably on Friday night, he went ahead and certified the machines anyway, despite what his own report tells him, which confirms, and I mean it says in quite plain language, that you know, anybody who can get access to these machines can completely control, can flip the results of an election.
And I want to direct people to your coverage at bradblog.com, because you also put together, you linked to a video interview in which Secretary McPherson, I believe in January of 2006, described a process that would take place before these Diebold machines could be recertified, and it required a sign-off by the Federal Office of Information Technology, the ITA. That didn't occur, and he also promised that there would be public hearings in between that approval by the feds and his recertification here in California. Those steps were not taken, and so far we haven't been able to get to the Secretary of State to hold him to account, but we did talk to Senator Deborah Bowen the other day, and she's steaming mad about this.
Yeah, she is outraged because, in fact, yeah, in that video, I mean, he says outright that, you know, until they hear back from the feds, they cannot move forward with their certification process. But he went and did it anyway. I'm concerned for your listeners driving home this hour, listening to all of this stuff, wondering how this can be, and I just don't want them to swerve off the road with rage, anger, or confusion. All of this stuff is very real and as perplexing to me as I'm sure it is to folks who are listening and hearing this stuff for the first time. It Yeah. boggles the mind.
And we're not going to have time to talk about it, but I want to direct people to Brad Blog again for the story that you broke a couple of days ago, that touchscreen voting machines made by Diebold have built-in wireless infrared data transfer ports, and you've identified them in a picture right on the back of one of these boxes. This is very disturbing, and people should get up to speed on that. Jake in Arcata, thanks for holding. You're on the air with Peter B. and Brad.
Hey, Peter. Hey, Brad. How's it going?
Hey, Jake.
Hey, I have a question for you. Obviously, the big story this week, well, you know, other than the civil war in Iraq, would be the port story and how Bush is turning it over to the United Arab Emirates. I've heard a lot about the Carlyle Group having a big stake in this deal, and as we all know, the Carlyle Group is the investment firm the Bush family has a lot of money in, that the Bin Laden family had a lot of money in, that invests in the defense industries. I'm kind of curious, what is the Carlyle Group's connection to this deal of turning over our ports to the United Arab Emirates? Do you have the details on that?
You know what? I don't have the details on that. I have not been able to cover that story as closely as I might have liked because we've had so much breaking news going on this week, and a lot more next week. But maybe Peter has.
I'll pinch it for you here. Yeah. The connection is that Jon Snow, who is the Secretary of Treasury, was charged as the Secretary to conduct the review of this proposed transfer of P&O from a British company to Dubai, the government of Dubai, through their company. And he stands to benefit because CSX, the company he used to be CEO of, made a deal with Dubai Ports World just before he left that post to become a government employee through the revolving door. $1.8 billion was the deal between CSX and Dubai Ports World, and it was revolving around ports and port machinery operations in Europe. Jon Snow also appears to be benefiting through deferred payments and his pension plan because the Carlyle Group, purchased a major stake in CSX about a month after Jon Snow left the company to become Secretary of the Treasury. That's what we do know. There's a lot more we need to dig in and find out. Thank you, Jake. A quick comment from Chris in Salinas. You're on the air, Chris. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering when Tony Entrundo is going to show up back on your show.
That's a good question. We have the invitation out. He has told the station manager of KRXA that he's going to do it. We had a slot for him yesterday that he did not respond to accept. And so I'll say the invitation process continues, Chris.
Yeah, well, I've emailed him a couple times and he hasn't emailed me back. Also, who should we contact as Californians to stop this Bruce McPherson? I mean, besides our assembly members and our Senate, is there anything else we can do?
Yeah, indeed. There's five members of the Rules Committee. I wish I had a really quick, easy link I could give you. But essentially, check Brad's blog. You'll find it there and elsewhere. There's five members of the Rules Committee that need to hear from you via phone, via email, however, that you would like them to subpoena the vendors of these electronic voting machines to show up at a hearing. And frankly, at this point, subpoena, as far as I'm concerned, Bruce McPherson, who also refuses to show up. But Deborah Bowen... .com, I think, has more on all of that, if I'm not mistaken.
You're right. D-E-B-R-A, Bowen, B-O-W-E-N. Thank you, Chris. Good
all
to
right,
talk
thanks.
To you. Brad, as always, a pleasure. We'll catch up with you next week. I want to remind people to go to bradblog.com and sign up for a subscription. You name the price. What a sweet deal. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, brother. Have a great weekend.
Happy trails to you.